So there's lots of areas where we're seeing companies addressing short-term challenges, but also looking at ways to rebalance their supply chains moving forward and having risk mitigation strategies. I think supply chains will, if they don't already in every business, will have a seat at the table of every business moving forward, because they're both an opportunity and a risk.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, and I am your host, Tom Rafferty. Hi everyone, welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Rafferty, and with me on the show today, I have Richard Howells. Richard, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi Tom. So I work for SAP in the area of digital supply chain, and I spend a lot of time writing about business challenges, trends, and opportunities for supply chain executives.
Yeah, you write a lot of stuff on Forbes. Some great articles, and you wrote one because, you know, we are. This is, what, the 2nd of April 2020. We are in the middle of a global pandemic, the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. Today is the day that we are going to reach 1 million people infected and 50,000 dead. And, you know, it's presenting lots of challenges. And you wrote a blog post about this on Forbes called Business as Unusual: Resiliency in Times of Supply Chain Disruption. And you made some, you know, great points in that and talked up some interesting stories. So I thought it'd be cool to have you come on the podcast because, you know, this is a supply chain issue big time globally. And you address a lot of the challenges there in that article. So would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So, I mean, I started the article off about talking about some of the challenges from a supply chain perspective that this pandemic has caused. I mean, it's hard to believe that when we were celebrating New Year's Eve all 3 months ago, that this wasn't even a figment of anyone's imagination. We couldn't believe that we'd be in this case 3 months later. And what's happened is that, I mean, we're seeing supply chain at the center of everything at the moment. It's both the challenges in some cases and the opportunities in others. I mean, when we started off with the issues in China, it created a huge supply issue because China is the manufacturing factory of the world. Mm-hmm. So when you've got uncertain supply of critical materials, it has a knock-on effect throughout the whole world. And then as the pandemic spread, so did the demand volatility as people started panic buying. I mean, we're seeing huge demand for medical equipment, medical devices, and of key products from a consumer goods standpoint. And the demand for luxury items and discretionary items is non-existent now. It's amazing to me that we are reliant as a globe now on 20 or 30 items that everyone's looking for in the stores.
And toilet paper.
Toilet paper of all things. Who thought there would be a rush on toilet paper?
I think that was a social media thing more than anything else. Because we had our lockdown announced on the 14th, and I went to the local supermarket, and there was plenty of toilet paper. But what was missing was all the meat. The meat counter was stripped bare. Now that was fixed in a matter of a couple of days. It was a supply chain issue again. You know, they didn't anticipate that big demand, but they got it fixed in a couple of days. So there aren't any shortages here. There are sometimes if you go to the shops, there might be a short-term shortage of an individual brand, but not of that class of goods.
And I'm based in the US, and we've still got, I mean, you're a few weeks ahead as far as the pandemic is in Spain, and we still have shortages, and those shortages are now because of capacity constraints. There's shortages because we don't have enough manufacturing capacity to increase the production of toilet paper, for example, which was running at full production anyway. And we're having logistics challenges of getting goods from point A to point B. If they've got to come from foreign ports or foreign countries, there's no transport. The flights are down by 80%+. Some of the ports are closed, or there's less capacity going through it. And then we've got the challenge of drivers and the risk that those drivers are taking without the proper security and humanitarian coverage. And that's the final challenge I think we see from this at the moment, is the humanitarian risk. the balance of labor shortages, but also of ensuring the health and safety of employees who are doing the vital jobs, who are doing the quote required jobs. How we've changed manufacturing processes, for example, where there can be less people on the plant floor, to make sure that we've got the social distancing during working processes and working environments as well.
That's got to be a huge challenge for manufacturers. I mean, they've set up their manufacturing lines in a particular way, and to your point, now they have to have the social distancing between the employees on the floor just for health and safety.
Yeah, it's things that you wouldn't think about in normal circumstances. I'm sure it's never been thought through as a plan of how to do this, and people are having to come up with solutions literally on the fly.
Yeah, I went grocery shopping yesterday just for the second time since lockdown, because the grocery shops are tending to push us towards online deliveries. And in the grocery stores now, they have markings on the floor to say where you should stand when you're in a queue for the checkout counter, you know, and there's, you know, 2 meters between each mark so that you're 2 meters behind the person in front of you, you know, again, for social distancing. And they have a glass Perspex barrier between you and the person at the checkout counter, which was never there before. And again, it's just to protect the employees from potential infection from shoppers.
Yes,
and vice versa, I suppose.
They've just started introducing in some of the stores here one-way systems around the supermarkets as well, which I haven't seen up until now in the US.
Wow. And we're seeing lots of repurposing as well of manufacturing. I sent you a link this morning to the Airbus plants here in Spain. I mean, Airbus have several factories here in Spain, and they have over 20 3D printers because they were the first commercial airline company. 3D printed parts and commercial flights back in, I think it was 2015. So they've been playing a lot and working a lot with 3D printers. And now they've turned that around into using those 3D printers to make the Perspex masks that the healthcare workers are using to keep themselves safe when they're dealing with people who are very sick.
Actually, there's a consortium that I've seen online of 3D printing companies who are sharing the designs of these 3D masks for that very purpose. They're crowdsourcing and sharing the information. And we're also seeing other companies doing some similar things. I read about Medtronic opening up on making the designs of their ventilators, or their simple ventilators, their basic line of ventilators, open to other people so that they can manufacture those ventilators.
Brilliant.
And they're also partnering with Tesla to increase their production. You're seeing automotive companies becoming outsourced manufacturers for medical device companies to increase the production, because there's a lot of very small ventilator manufacturers that just can't scale.
Yeah. But if I had said that to you on December 31st, that the car companies would be making ventilators in April of this year, you'd have said, Tom, you're smoking crack.
That's exactly
how would that
right.
ever happen?
Yes, and they're becoming the contract manufacturers rather than working with lots of contract manufacturers for their parts.
So how are these automotive, for example, companies sourcing the parts to manufacture these ventilators? How would that work?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today, influence the future.
Well, that means having improved visibility across the supply chain. I mean, first of all, I mean, SAP is doing a lot of work in providing offers to our customers to access some of our systems in these times of need. And mapping the visibility of where the suppliers are that have the inventory with your demand, And building and having visibility across the network of that is a huge, huge first step. I mean, I would imagine that there's, as I said, there's a lot of partnerships going on. The the medical device manufacturers will be sharing their partner information and their supply information and supply sources to satisfy that demand for additional materials that these companies may never buy. I mean, we're seeing other examples. We're seeing perfume manufacturers and liquor producers making hand sanitizers. I mean, at the moment, the medical companies need three or four sections of things. They need the public to have, and they need hand sanitizers to reduce the spread of the virus. They need the masks, the testing equipment, and the robes for testing people and treating people. And ultimately, in the worst case situations, they need ventilators and an unparalleled amount of ventilators to actually treat the most critically ill. And companies are coming together to help support that. As I mentioned, the hand sanitizer example. We see the ventilator example with car manufacturers. We're seeing other companies, another one of our customers actually, Decathlon, are repurposing their devices for their breathing snorkeling devices and adapting them to be ventilators, working with partners to adapt them to be ventilators. So we really are thinking out of the box and building partnerships that you wouldn't have seen. And it's actually good to see companies coming together to solve some of these problems.
I came across a thread of tweets a couple of days ago, and again this morning, because someone else tweeted it at me, where it was, I think, a psychologist talking about how in times like this, people are afraid that there's going to be a breakdown of social order. Whereas, in fact, in times of crisis like this, it seems to bring out, in fact, the best of us. The likes of the people in New York in 9/11 all coming together to help each other out. And, you know, we're seeing it again in this situation where rather than, you know, everything falling apart, in fact, we're getting, to your point, unprecedented partnerships between businesses that would never work together before to try and all come together to produce the goods that are in short supply.
Yes, I mean, you see it at a personal level with neighbours helping other neighbours, and we're seeing it at a business level as well at a larger scale. And it's good to see, but the wrong circumstance. I wish we didn't have to see it, but it's good to see when it does happen.
Richard, what are some of the strategies that companies are coming up with to address this situation?
Well, we're seeing across all areas of the supply chain different needs and different strategies. If we start at the basic level, over the last 10 to 15 years, we've stripped a lot of costs out of the supply chain. Hmm. We went to a global supply chain to reduce the cost of raw materials. For example, we've outsourced a lot of our manufacturing to have cheaper labor. And this has done a great job in cost reduction, but it's also increased the risk involved.
Another form of cost.
It's coming home at the moment as a huge cost implication and a customer service implication. And in the short term, I think we've got to work out from a supply standpoint, where the inventory is. How can I access that inventory? Which partners do I have that already have it? Which other companies have available inventory that I can source? How do I get the goods to the right place, to the hotspots when we're talking about medical supplies, to the areas with the most shortages when we talk about supermarkets? Yeah. We're seeing so alternate sourcing strategies are one of the areas in the short term that I see a lot of supply chains looking to solve. Also, where to position inventory. In a global supply chain, I can't be totally reliant on having all my finished goods being shipped and it takes a week for me to get the finished goods. I need a source of inventory of finished goods locally. We're seeing a lot of companies start thinking, or will be thinking a lot about the balancing of offshoring versus nearshoring versus onshoring. Even though it may cost more to manufacture locally, but you need that to reduce that risk.
Yeah.
The whole area of employee safety, of ensuring you have the environmental health and safety processes in place to ensure the safety of your people working on the plant floor, the people working in the distribution area, and your customers' safety of making sure that the products are of good quality. And having visibility of demand, I think, is critical. I mean, This may be a case. It's taken a long time for the retailers to share the point of sales information with manufacturers. Now is the time to share that information. We need to know where we have shortages. We need to know what is going off the shelves, although it's pretty obvious what's going off the shelf as a consumer. But maybe the manufacturing companies could have had advanced information of that to get more goods of the right sort to the retailers that needed it the most.
Right.
So there's lots of areas where we're seeing companies addressing short-term challenges, but also looking at ways to rebalance their supply chains moving forward and having risk mitigation strategies. I think supply chains will, if they don't already in every business, will have a seat at the table of every business moving forward, because they're both an opportunity and a risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that brings up a good point. Where do we go post-pandemic, you know, in whether it's 6 or 12 or 18 months' time? What is the supply chain world going to look like?
Well, I mentioned I think we'll still have global supply chains, mm-hmm. but maybe with local execution. We will be balancing our inventory so that we keep a certain percentage of inventory locally. We will be balancing our manufacturing from outsourcing versus offshoring to maybe doing some of the manufacturing ourselves, and at least having it local manufacturing capabilities and capacities. I think that we will not be reliant on single sourcing strategies. We won't put all our eggs in one basket. We will have multiple suppliers that can provide the same critical components that we need, and balance that. Maybe we work with one with 20% and 80% with the other at the moment, but have the ability to switch so that you can go to local sourcing as and when required. And it's going to cost a little bit more, but it'll reduce risk.
Yeah.
And I think sustainability actually will be a huge thing moving forward. I mean, it should be a huge thing anyway, but we're seeing the environmental impact of this pandemic is actually a positive impact on the globe. We're seeing less pollution in certain areas, and we're seeing cleaner waterways due to less distribution and fumes being put into the atmosphere. And I think that as companies start to think about how they are global but execute locally, that will reduce the carbon footprint of our supply chains automatically. But we also want to ensure that we are still sourcing ethically, that we are having good labor manufacturing environments to work in for working conditions, and we are designing sustainable products and recyclable products for the good of the planet anyway.
I actually have a very practical example of that. I have a personal air quality meter. It's made by a company called Plume Labs. It's called a Flow air quality meter. It's a device you wear on your belt loop or somewhere like that, and it measures five different air quality indices. There are things like VOCs, which are, you know, volatile organic compounds, NOx, PM1, PM2.5, and PM10. So that's particulate matter at different sizes. And it has an app which comes with the phone, which syncs with the phone. So it matches up the air quality, which it measures once every minute, along those five measurements. It syncs that with the GPS coordinates and then uses mapping data to give you a map of the air quality for everywhere you've been for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year, etc. So I only get out of the house now to walk the dogs because we're on lockdown, and walking the dogs is literally the only, well, that and grocery shopping, you know, but most of the groceries are, you know, online deliveries. So just walking the dogs. I used to walk the dogs anyway before the lockdown. So I have before and after data for the air quality where I live and for the walk that I take every day. So I have perfect AB data, and the difference in air quality between, you know, before the lockdown and since the lockdown is just amazing. Yeah. And even before the lockdown, I used to, in presentations, talk about, you know, you get air quality in one area, which is terrible, and another area, which is better. But it's not just a question of where, it's also a question of when. And what I mean by that is,
rush hours.
Yeah, exactly. The I used to take the dog out for a walk in the morning and the evening. And in the morning, it was, you know, just before 9 a.m. and I'd be walking past a local school. And of course, all the SUVs would be outside the school as the parents were delivering their kids. I'd walk past the same school at 8 o'clock in the evening and there wouldn't be a car for miles. And the air quality difference between those two times of day for the exact same place was incredible. But now that there have been almost no cars driving by there in 3.5 weeks, it's flat. You know, there's almost nothing there at all. It's just like almost, it's not exactly zero across all five measurements, but it's close enough.
And it's interesting, using personal devices like that would be a great way of getting the information across the globe or the country,
yeah,
about how that has improved, because that information is stored centrally in the cloud somewhere.
And that information
can really add value. And there's another example about that we've been seeing this in the news about, we can see where the hotspots are and where they're reducing a little by people who are using electronic temperature
meters. That's right.
And
I
this company has visibility across the North America at the moment of the temperatures are coming down on in certain areas, which implies that people are getting a little healthier in those areas, or the pandemic is reducing in some of those areas, or increasing as the case may be.
I saw that. That's fascinating.
That type of information from smart assets is very valuable in today's climate, and it's very valuable from a business perspective moving forward as well.
It is. And the company who make that air quality meter know that they've been mapping air quality across cities globally since they started. It was one of the business drivers of creating the air quality meters. Richard, we're at about 20 minutes. We're at just over 20 minutes. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast. I like to keep it at about the 20 to 25 minute mark. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you think that we should have?
I think we've covered most of the topics, or all the topics. I think I'd just like to hope that everyone stays safe and adheres with the different mandates and guidances from the different governments around the world. And hopefully the next time we do a podcast, Tom, we'll be talking about in happier times and about happier subjects.
I hope so. Okay, everyone, thanks a million for your interest. Richard, thanks for coming on the show. And to everyone who's listening, stay happy, stay healthy, stay safe, stay sane. Because, I mean, you know, we're all on lockdown right now. It's very easy to kind of go a bit out of your head. Do stay sane.
I'm not sure if I can do that.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain, or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application to get new episodes right away as soon as they're published. And also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.